This is Jordan, and you're listening to the Code 7 Podcast Network.
Warning. This episode contains the three A's of podcasting: adult content, adult language, and awesomeness. You've been warned.
Welcome to Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them.
Good afternoon, this is Ricardo with the Code 7 Podcast Network, and this is going to be episode 185 of Within the Trenches, true stories from the 911 dispatchers who live them. I'm recording live from Indianapolis, Indiana, from the Marriott for the 2018 NENA APCO conference. And it is mid-April. And it is snowing outside. It is freaking crazy. Mother Nature is drunk or something. She doesn't know what's going on with the weather. It's pretty crazy. I was in Michigan yesterday to see my son's senior concert. He's in band, and it was going to be the last one. It's the farewell one where they show pictures of them when they were a baby and all the way up until, you know, up to their senior year. And they canceled it because there was an ice storm in Michigan. So my family and I drove back to Indiana, home in Fort Wayne, through an ice storm. By the time I got about an hour out of Michigan, it was completely fine. So thank God for that. But it is now snowing in Indianapolis, and it's, well, it's whatever. So it makes it interesting.
Definitely.
So my guest today is the always fun Jared, and he is the director with Dearborn County out of Indiana. Because there is a Dearborn in Michigan, but this is Dearborn County out of Indiana. How's it going, man?
Good, Ricardo. It's always a pleasure to be around you.
Dude, we always have a lot of fun. And so last year here at the conference, we had the first Imagine Listening episode where it was a live audience where dispatchers would stand up and they would tell their Imagine Listening stories, or their I Am 911 stories, rather, for Imagine Listening.
Yeah, it was a great time and very emotional as well.
It was, man. Those first 30 minutes were, it was crazy. There was, what, about 100 and some people in there, and you had the microphone. Thank you very much for that as well. You had the microphone and you were walking around with it. And then Rob and I were up front and we were reading stories as well, because if you remember in the beginning of that, not a lot of people raise their hands to tell their stories. And then a few would say theirs, and then maybe a few more. But then as soon as I said, if you want to write them down, we'll read them for you. People just started writing and writing and writing, and we had tons of stories.
But then, we could have kept going longer, probably.
We probably could, yeah. But then after those 30 minutes, we ended up jumping into the next segment of it, which was open mic. And that was all of the funny stories.
Yeah, that was the best way to end it.
Yes, it was. It was a lot of fun. Everybody started telling all kinds of crazy stories. And I've been telling everyone, now that I've done a few of these, that it just takes one person. It takes one person to tell a story that's all, you know, that's a sexual story, and it all goes downhill from there. And I think it was in Iowa, actually. I had been telling people that, because I was the closing speaker, and along with being the closing speaker and telling my story, I had a portion of it where I did an Imagine Listening and open mic. And I had been telling people building up to that session, it just takes one. It takes one person to do it. And the first story, if I remember correctly, the first story that came out was the one that took it all the way downhill. But it
always finds the gutter, it seems like.
Yes, exactly. Because that's the types of shit that happens in dispatch, and people don't always hear that stuff. So yeah, it was really good. So I've been telling people and posting, make sure you have your stories ready. Have your stories ready. Because I think that's one of the things that you know, people had last year, was that if they would have known sooner, that they would have had all their stories ready, you know. Yeah. So I've been doing that. I've been pushing it. Like, have your stories ready. Cause it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. So having you on here, cause we know each other through my 9 to 5 through in digital and stuff. And you know, the stuff that I've done around here, and, we've known each other for a while now, but I don't know your story. I don't know your background or how you got into everything. So how did you get into public safety or dispatching to begin with?
Well, as a kid, I hung out with my dad at the firehouse in the life squad building. Mm-hmm. My dad was an EMT, and there were many nights I would fall asleep on the couch at the firehouse while my dad and some of his buddies were playing pool or whatever. My mom was a nurse, and mm-hmm. She worked night shifts, so there was a lot of nights, you know, we were home alone or whatever, and we would go up to the firehouse and hang out. And
that's pretty cool that you actually got to do that. So in the firehouse that you were at, was there a pole?
There was no pole.
Oh, damn. I was going to say, was it like Ghostbusters?
No, no pole.
Were they both up there and, you know, he's like, come on, you
got
to try this.
We got one.
Yeah, we got one. Now, did that ever freak you out as a kid? Every time like the sirens or whatever would go off saying that there was a call that was coming in?
Nah, it was, I loved it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So do you do that? Did you get into that first before dispatching?
Yeah, I became an EMT when I was still in high school. Mm-hmm. I graduated in 96 from, I guess I could tell you where high school, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
South Dearborn High School.
Nice.
And I was in EMT class while I was still in high school, became an EMT and ran on the squad, very active for several years.
Sweet.
And then when I turned 21, you had to be 21 to get on the fire department. And I was already dispatching by then, but... got on the fire department as well.
Nice. So you come from that background then, because there's a lot of people that I've talked to that were completely green. You know, they right. didn't have any background or any family or anything like that. So you kind of had, you grew up with that. So you had a taste for it already.
Yeah, definitely. Back when my dad was on the life squad, they used like 10 codes and all these signals and everything that we're trying to get away from now and get more plain English on the radio. But
right. Yeah.
So you had like a code 2, type 3, condition 2, whatever. And
holy crap.
It was like you had to go look at the paper that was in the cabinet at the house to see where they were going to.
That's funny. See, and we had, what was it? It was from like 10-2 or 10-3 all the way to like 10-72 or something for our 10 codes. And we would use them, you know, all the time. We had to memorize them. And I remember I had given out a code and one of the state troopers said, Central, I have no idea what you're saying. Our codes are completely different than what the county's is. Can you just tell me in plain English? And then we did. We started doing that. And eventually they ended up, you know, pushing it out completely where they didn't want us to do any 10 codes at all.
Right.
But some of the deputies would still say, well, what's the 10 code for that? And we're not supposed to be using these, but all right, you know.
Old habits are hard to break.
Yeah. So there was only a few of them that we would use, of course, 10-4, 10-5 on a traffic stop or on a call. It just meant that they didn't need any more status checks, that they were fine out there. And then, you know, everybody knows 1096. So do
what's
you
1096?
No, you don't.
Is that a mental person?
That is. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Someone who's,
we call them signal 34, but if they're really bad, then you say like signal 68. Cause it's like doubles 34.
Nice. Oh, that's funny. No, I have not heard that. See, and that's the other thing, because working with Lori, you know, sometimes she would send me something and she would say, you know, signal whatever. And I would send her a message back and say, we never use signals, so I'm not sure which one that one is. And then she would tell me, I'd be like, oh, okay.
There's not a very good Google Translate for that, right?
No, there isn't. Nope, not at all. No, there is not at all.
I didn't get paid to say that either.
Right. We are not sponsored by Google, but thank you for the shout out. You never know. Yeah, you never know. So you're an EMT and you're 21. You needed to be 21 to go to the fire department. Did you join the fire department first and then go into dispatch, or were you?
No, I was already a dispatcher when I got on the fire department. So I graduated in 96. Mm-hmm. So that's like in May or June or whatever. The church I was going to, the preacher there, he was one of the sheriff's deputies or chief deputy at the time. Mm-hmm. And a spot was open in dispatch. And just happens to be that the guy my dad would play pool with at the firehouse several years before was then the 911 director at the time.
Oh.
So.
Nice.
he was the 911 director at the time, and I put in for the it was a part time dispatch job. I got hired in November of 96 part time.
Nice. So
it was May of 97 before I became full time.
So what was that like for you going in? Because you're switching from, you know, EMT, and now you're in dispatch. Did you ever sit in dispatch at all? Or?
No, I never did until I got the job there. Didn't really know what dispatch did or.
So it's 1996, and you've got a part time job. What is it that you're looking at when you sit down at the console?
When I sit down at the console, okay. So it's a small room, which most dispatch centers still are small rooms, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But we have one old CRT monitor, like big old style.
That's right. Those are like my kids monitors
don't even know what they look like.
With the junk in the trunk.
Yeah.
Right.
And that was our 911 screen. We have another big CRT monitor that is what we run IDAX and Spillman through.
Yeah.
And then the radio console at that time was probably as big as this table here, and it has all these buttons and lights and things on it. And, you know, I thought I was going to land airplanes or whatever. There were so many buttons you could get lost or confused on what to do.
Right. Holy crap. So then on top of learning all the codes and everything else, you have to learn how to do this, which is essentially like a soundboard, a huge soundboard that you would see in a recording studio.
Definitely.
Holy crap. So were there codes then that you would have to type in order to send out certain tones for like fire department or anything like that?
Because our encoder didn't have, I know what you're talking about. Some of the encoders were like that, but ours had buttons that you would push and they would light up.
Oh, okay.
For each department or whatever. And then you hit the send button on it. It was an old Zetron panel, probably about 19 inches wide.
See, and I had a huge Motorola when I first started out my career. And that one, there were like four or five number codes that you'd have to punch in just to send the tone out for the fire department that was literally across the street from us. And sometimes I'd be pushing it in and it wouldn't work. And I'd go to push it again. And I'd think, I want to just go out back with a megaphone and just say, you got one, you got a call coming.
Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, that thing was cool. So that's what you got. That's what you're looking at. And was there a CAD at all or a computer aided dispatch?
We did have CAD. We had Spillman at the time.
Oh, okay.
It was an old green screen, like DOS looking
program. Just like command line type stuff that you're typing in codes to get certain things.
Yep.
Dang. Well, it looked totally different. I had one as well. It was called the AS400 is the one that we used. So it was pretty much the same thing. It was just, it was a black screen with, I think it was like red and green colors. And that's all the scheme was.
Yeah.
and then you're putting it through. And then after that, you know, we switched to a much bigger and better CAD system. So you get in there, and then what did your training consist of then? And how long did it take?
I did go to a 40-hour APCO class, the PSTC class over in Hamilton County, Ohio.
Okay.
Actually, I think it may have been 80 hours. I think it was maybe 2 weeks at that time.
Oh, man. Okay.
So, and then we also had EMD training. We did have the priority dispatch pro QA. So.
And this was 96? And they had that?
We had it shortly.
Wow.
Well, I was hired there.
That's pretty awesome. I started in 2001, and I had no idea about pro QA until years later, like way later. But, hey, that's awesome. I didn't know that they were out any earlier than maybe 2000 or something. So you had probably...
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we had it when I started. I mean...
Dang.
Sometimes I forget things.
Don't we all? Yes. The fact that we can multitask so much in dispatch, it affects the memory a little. I read that somewhere. I could not... For those who are listening...
I'll have to remember that.
You can look it up. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, see if you can remember that one. Yeah. Yeah, for those who are listening, don't quote me on it, but I know I read it somewhere and I don't remember where I read it. So just Google it, but it's out there. It's something with multitasking all the time. Your short-term memory and stuff kind of... The long-term memory is still fine. I think it is, but it's the short-term memory that gets affected.
Fuzzy?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Because, you know, you're always doing a bunch of different things and you can't concentrate on one thing at a time. seemed to make sense. Yep. I don't know. So, you've gone through your training and, you know, you're taking phone calls and stuff. What are some of the earlier phone calls that you took? Do you remember your first call at all or anything like that?
I do not recall my very first call. Mm-hmm. I don't remember what the first call would have been.
Or any of your earlier calls. Do you remember any of those? Like, were you gung ho just to jump in and take 901 calls, or were you a little nervous?
Oh, definitely nervous, very intimidated when you first walked in the room. And, but I've learned, you know, being around 911, the people you work with, they're always willing to help you. And,
right.
You just have to ask for that help sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. And that sometimes is something that we don't do.
Right.
You know, we don't ask for help, but you know, you're all in there as a team. Right. There's that camaraderie that comes with it as well, that when the shit hits the fan, everybody, no matter, and this is just judging from my experience, in my old PSAP in Allegan, even if people were in the shittiest mood or whatever, when the shit hit the fan, everybody was working
all decks on hand, right?
Yes. All hands on deck.
Yeah. Whatever. That's what I said.
So,
all hands on deck.
There you go. So what about some of any call that you can remember that you were taking? I know there's a funny one for sure, because I've heard the audio and that
some
one.
Some of those I didn't take. I just recorded. I'm trying to remember what I would have took that would have been funny.
This one was an animal complaint.
Oh, was it the guy that touched the raccoon?
I think so.
Yeah. One guy, he calls and says it's not a bear. It's not a dog. It's not a cat. And here he had, I think he was feeding the birds or something, and reached in the food pail to get something, the food out, and there was this dead raccoon in there.
What? So
he was afraid he was going to get rabies by touching this dead raccoon.
Yeah, you know, you'd be surprised. Well, people who are listening, you'd be surprised at the amount of calls that come in for stuff like that, you know, raccoons. You know, and dead ones at that. You know, I remember talking to many people where they would say, can you send out animal control or somebody out here for these? There's a couple of raccoons that are here. I don't know if they have rabies or what's going on, but they're in my yard and they're just like rolling around.
Yeah.
And I would say, well, what else are they doing? Like, well, they're on top of each other. Like,
here we're going to the gutter.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, well, you know, I wouldn't tell them that, you know, they're probably mating or something. But I would say animal control doesn't go out for that, because it's not a domestic animal. Right. It's a wild animal.
We had a call one time, and one of the other, my coworkers answered this call, and the lady's calling about the deer along the roadway. So mm-hmm. We're in, you know, Southeast Indiana and
in Dearborn
County, and there are a ton of white-tailed deer, right?
Yeah.
Well, this lady calls because they're by the road, and she's afraid one of them's going to get hit by a car. And we're like, okay. So I don't know what she wanted us to, you know, go chase the deer away, but...
Oh, right. Actually, exactly. Can you come out here and shoo it? Shoo it away? Not chew. Shoo it away. Venison is good. I do like venison.
I've always wanted the fire department. Like, you know, when you get that cat in the tree call?
Yes.
I've always wanted them just to show up and then, you know, the first guy, you know, roll up lights and siren blaring, and first guy off the truck, grab the chainsaw and just cut the tree down. Wouldn't that be great?
Like, sir, what are you doing? You want me to get the cat down? We can't climb up there. I mean, we can put a ladder up there, but... It's faster if we do it this way.
That would be a great still commercial, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It could be all dramatic and everything in the beginning, and then they show up there, and you've got the nice, sweet music going on as the firefighter goes to get the cat, and then just cuts the tree down.
Yeah.
That would be a good commercial. So if you guys are listening, make that your commercial. Jared gets the credit for
that.
We
won't charge. We just want to be in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we want to be in it. I'll be a bystander. I don't care. I'll be a bystander. I'll just stand there. You know, there was another call, actually. There was one where someone had called in because they hadn't gotten their food. It was like at an...
Oh, this was a couple, and they were called... they end up both getting on the phone. This is really weird. They're having a domestic because, one, they're both intoxicated.
Uh-huh.
And the lady wants to leave to go get her soup at the restaurant in the community they lived in. And she said, he will not let me go. My partner will not let me go.
Oh,
and then she starts talking about herself in first person, and it was really funny.
That's a different one. The one I'm talking about is an adult foster care home. And the lady is saying that they haven't brought them their food and they're hungry. And you're asking where they're at.
I remember this call as well.
So take me through that.
Yeah. Well, this lady, they're in a kind of like an assisted living place. It's an elderly lady, and she calls 911 because I guess it's past time for Meals on Wheels to show up or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just had to try to calm her down and get a hold of the people to bring her food to her.
Well, she was yelling at you like crazy.
She was not happy.
No. Well, she was hangry, I guess.
Hangry, very hangry.
Yeah, very hangry, going into freaking Hulk mode, man, because she was yelling and screaming throughout that. I think we've actually played that tape at one of the sessions, but that one, I love that one because you're asking her questions, and there's at one point where she says, "What do you want to know that for?" And you end up responding with, "I'm going to get you some chow."
I take care of her.
That's right. Yeah. And you did. You did. Customer service, man. Yep. You got her chow. It was just hilarious to me that you said chow rather than like lunch or anything. It's just, "I'm going to get you some chow." And she was like, "All right, then."
She was probably referred to it as chow or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so you've gone through and you've had like 18 years worth of dispatching and 3 years of your position now as a director. What is that like going from being dispatched, like working your way up to the top? What is that like? Because now you're, for lack of a better way to put it, you're on the other side of the hallway. You know, you're admin now.
Right. Yeah, it can be difficult. I mean, you've worked with your crew or whatever, you know, your whole career until you get the director's job. I was very reluctant putting in for the job because, you know, for one thing, at my place, it's an appointed position. Mm-hmm. It's appointed by our three commissioners, and you don't know for sure if you're going to always have that, you know, job or whatever.
Right.
But the more I thought about it and prayed about it, I decided, you know, this was something I needed to try to do, and I'm glad I did. Looking back 3 years now, I'm very glad I did. I feel like I can move our agency forward and try to make things better moving forward.
That's awesome, man. And on top of that, you're also part of the board, or at least the committee. You're the
first vice president of
Indiana NENA. Right.
Until July. And then I become the president.
That's right. So what comes with all of that? And actually, if you could kind of talk about this conference so that, you know, maybe we can build like a buzz, you know, for next year's conference as well. You know, why should people come to a conference like this? And especially this one.
This is a great opportunity here in Indiana for any dispatchers or, you know, not even just dispatchers, directors or anybody involved with 911. You get out here, you get really great training. We got great speakers here. A whole bunch of different topics that will be talked about throughout the week. Another great thing about conferences is the networking.
Right.
You meet a lot of, you won't meet a stranger here. They may be a stranger when you walk up to them, but after you've introduced yourself or whatnot, you guys are friends from then on.
Right.
It's like, you know, kind of like firemen, that they're one big family. When something bad happens to a fireman or a police officer, everybody comes together as one, and dispatchers they're no different.
For sure. We are one. Yes. That is coined by Ryan with the Denise Amber Lee Foundation. So I have to give him that credit there. But no, you are exactly right. From the time that I came here in 2014, it's just been a pleasure, man. Every person that I've met, we've remained friends, you know, we're on social media and everything else. And I always feel a lot of love when I come here. Even when Even when I'm carrying around Coronas in a backpack and I try to pop one open and crack my forehead
with
the bottle cap. That was 2 years ago now. It was funny as hell. But yeah, this conference is always really, really good. And then you know, going into your presidency for Indiana, Nina, what does that mean? Like, what does that all entail?
Well, being the president or an officer of the organization, we do have quarterly meetings throughout the state that you need to attend. We have several conference calls or whatnot for the conference throughout the year, just getting everything planned. And we'll have several subcommittees, so you'll have opportunities to serve on different committees or whatever to help plan the conference or what, you know, things like that.
Sweet.
And there's opportunities, even if you don't want to be on the board, to help with these committees. So if anyone is interested in getting involved, it's always a good time.
Awesome. So where do they go to get that figured out? Just the website?
Yeah, they could go to our website and click on the About. All of the officers, current officers, are listed there. Make contact with any of us, and we'll definitely find something for you to do.
Awesome. And then, so that's INNENA.org. That's IndianaNina.org is what it ends up coming out to. So again, INNENA.org.
APCO also launched their site, Indiana APCO chapter, and it's INAPCO.org, I believe.
Boom. There you go. And then you guys are on Facebook as well?
Facebook, and I think that's about it.
All right. Awesome.
I don't think we do the Twitter thing.
Nice. Well, thank you very much, man, for being on. It was a pleasure. And for those who are listening, if you have any comments, questions, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, you can email us. And that's going to be WTTpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter. That is @901podcast. You can like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/WithinTheTrenchesPodcast. And this episode is supported by InDigital, a leader in next-gen core services. And this episode, along with all the others, can be heard on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher Radio, iHeart Radio, and Spotify, as well as all of your favorite podcasting applications, as well as thejabberlog.com. Have a good one, everybody.
You just listened to a Code 7 Network podcast. If you have any questions or would like to be a guest on the show, send an email to WTTpodcast@gmail.com.